Doctor, I have really been looking forward to today.
Gil, there's always an air of excitement when we launch into a new subject, but there are some days where you and I know what's coming and the listeners don't, and we know they're in for a treat, and today is one of those days.
Just give the briefest of backgrounds, and then we'll save the balance of the time for what we have planned.
Well, a listener was kind enough to send us a tape that captivated everybody here who's heard it, and I know that our listeners are going to feel the same way very quickly. It is a presentation done before an audience by Mike Adkins. Now, I didn't know him. I've never met him, but he is a Christian minister. He loves the Lord. He's an evangelist. I believe he's what he would call a singing evangelist. He's been seen on television. He's spoken all over the United States. I understand he's been in 22 foreign countries. His ministry is expanding, and just to say his name, I'm sure many of our listeners will recognize it. I did not know him, but I tell you what, I know him now.
I hadn't heard of him either, but I really enjoy this man's ability to communicate.
Before we get started, Gil, I want to make a comment to the sophisticates in the audience, those that feel they're highly educated and they're above earthy things. And when they begin to hear this tape, I know some people are going to think, that is hicky and that is old-fashioned and I don't need any of that. Stay with it, friends. Just don't turn this radio off, especially listen to the end of the broadcast today, because there is a message here in its homey southern manner that all of us need.
Here's Mike Adkins.
We prayed about what house to buy, and we bought a house. God led us to it, got us a marvelous deal on it. It's the kind of house I love. It's an old house that I could work on and fix up. First thing I did, I said, I just see in my mind what this house was going to look like when I got finished. Didn't look that way now, but when I finished and I started with a lawn out in the front, there was just an old tree that had rotted and fell down, and I was going to fill in that little hole in the ground, and just, there was still a little bit of a stump. I was going to cut that out, fill the hole in, make it nice and smooth. I forgot, since we prayed, I forgot to check first to see who lived around me, because I trusted the Spirit of God, you know, that He would take care of those little things like that. And I'm going to tell you who lived right around the house I bought. On my left was a Catholic couple, their family. And on my right, I told you just backwards, on my right was a Catholic couple. On my left was a retired Methodist preacher. We became dear friends. He had great wisdom. He's dead now, but he was one of my dearest friends. And right across the street was a widow lady. And next door to her is the one I want to tell you about. It was an old, we used to, when his kids called them, old haunted looking houses. Now, we had a fellow in our town that everybody used to laugh at. Not everybody, you know what I mean, but generally, and the kids, we'd throw snowballs at him in the wintertime. He was weird. He was strange. You know, he was, a lot of people call me town jokes. They're in every town, I notice. This fellow's name was Norman. Old Norman. He was 6'2", thereabouts, and he wore an old felt-looking hat that had so much dirt and oil in it, you couldn't tell what it looked like originally. Wore overalls that were just grease-soaked. He had old house shoes that he'd flop around town in, sometimes rubber galoshes, and they just flop when he walked up and down the street. And he'd walk real fast up and down Main Street like this, just and real fast, and then he'd stop and he'd talk to himself. And he'd do that all over Main Street. And people would say, boy, he's weird, isn't he? He owned the house across the street from me where the bushes were growing up, and the old chocolate paint was falling off the house, and the windows were so filthy, and I didn't even think anybody lived there at first. And what, that day that I was out there working on my tree stump, going to fix the yard, in my coveralls, barefoot, my wife and kids had gone uptown to the grocery store or something. I'm digging around the tree stump, going to saw it out. And I look over there. He walked out of that house, and I saw that he lived there, and I said, oh, no. I said, Lord, that's weird Norman over there. I said, you had me by the house across the street from weird Norman. I said, now, Lord, I don't know exactly what's wrong. I hear a lot of rumors, but I got two daughters, and he's strange. Hey, you know, he might harm them, I thought. And so I watched him. He came down to come out to the sidewalk and go uptown or somewhere, and I said, hi, Norman. He looked at me, and he went, and took off down the street. A couple days later, I was out there working on the same tree stump. He came out again. This time, he came out to work on his lawnmower out in the backyard. Something was wrong with it. It wouldn't run. He worked with it. He looked like he was getting disgusted, and I was watching him. I thought, boy, he really is strange. And then he did something that I'll never forget for eternity. He stood up as tall as he could. He looked like the Incredible Hulk. He raised his arms. He looked at me. He glared at me, and he ran from the back of his yard where I could just see him out to the side of the house, down the side of the house, right at me, stopping at his sidewalk. Praise God, he ran at me and screamed at the top of his lungs. He went, "Ah!" My heart was going... I had a little tool in my hand my brother-in-law made in the shop class at the high school had given it to me, and I remember saying, "Now, Lord, I know we're supposed to love everybody, but if he comes over here, Lord, I'm going to defend myself." He went back to the lawnmower, and he fooled around with it a little more, got angry some more, ran at me again, stopped at his sidewalk. Every time, three times he did that, three times he stopped at his sidewalk. Suddenly, the presence of the Lord settled all over me. I didn't expect it. I was surprised by it, but it settled all over me. And when it did, it seemed that faith or confidence, or I don't know the right word, more than I normally possessed, it began to well up in me. And I did something that surprised even me. I got up, barefoot, coveralls, walked across that street, and walked up to Norman in his backyard by his lawnmowers. I said, "You having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman?" He looked at me and he said, "You're having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman?" I said, I just said that. I said, I'm not much of a lawnmower mechanic, Norman. And I heard him say, "I'm not much of a mechanic, Norman." I looked at him. Clean the spark plug, tighten the screw or two. I don't know anything about a lawnmower. And I prayed and pulled that rope, and it ran like it'd been to the repair shop. Just hummed. Just... I got up and I looked at him, and he looked at that lawnmower. And he looked at me, and he looked at that lawnmower. And he did something for the first time I saw when he grinned real big. I saw a green and yellow tooth right here. And I saw one over here, and one here, and one here. And those spectacles he had on looked like Coke bottles. They were thick, and he had whiskers, had that old hat. But there he was grinning at me. And after that, every time he'd come out of the house, and I'd say, "Hi, Norman," he'd go, "Hello." And then he'd take off down the street. Men in my town said, I reckon what's the matter with Norman. Well, he's in the barber shop. You know, that's where you find out things in town. And especially our small town. And one fellow said, "I know what it is. Norman was hit by a Greyhound bus once. I heard that." Another fellow said, no, Fred, that's not it at all. What happened to Norman was he was brilliant. He was a genius. Everybody in the barber shop was... He said, in fact, he was such a genius that his mind exploded one day. I kind of knew what he was talking about. I had an algebra teacher once that... Boy, he knew algebra. He'd come to class every day. As brilliant as he was, he had his tie turned inside out like that every day. And I figured that was from too much, you know. And maybe that's what Norman's problem was. But God didn't care about all that. He said to me, "You, by beginning to put a little seed of a seed of a seed way down here deep in my heart for the first time," he said, "witness Jesus to him." Well, okay, Lord, I'll... One night after church, it is tradition in our town to go to the Dairy Queen. Not so much anymore. We got a new McDonald's too. But in our town, everybody used to go to the Dairy Queen after church. It was just what they did in those days. It was a trend. And the scene was always the same. You know, whoever got out first, whoever had the 20-minute service got there first, got their ice cream, sat down. Then the church that had the 25-minute service, they followed, and they got there next. They got their ice cream. They always waved at one another. "Hi, Bill. Hi, John. Hi. Hi, Betty. How's your family? Fine. How was church?" It always interested me. They always said the same thing. They'd say, "Oh, wonderful." Never had heard anybody have a bad service. And everybody be waving and smiling in the Dairy Queen. And everybody be eating their ice cream. I've done it myself. I'm not saying anything about my neighbors I wouldn't say about myself. I was doing it myself. I was sitting there eating ice cream one night, and I smiled at everybody. Guess who walked in right in the middle of all that? Thank you. He comes, gets his ice cream cone. He always sits there right in the same seat. And every Christian in the place, especially Brother Mike, who travels around the country lifting up Jesus and singing adoration. I rushed over to him and gave him the four spiritual laws. No. I did what everybody else did. I act like I didn't see him. We gave him room. We didn't talk about him or to him about Jesus. I've always wondered why, now that I tell this story, I thought, well, I guess it's because if somebody saw me talking to him, they might think I'm as strange as he is. And the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me and said, quietly, and don't make a show out of it, go over and tell him about Jesus. I said, Carmel, pray for me. I'm going to go talk to Norman. She's getting used to that kind of action, and she's prayed, and I went over there, and I sat down and real quick, and I said, hi, Norman, you remember who I am? He said, you remember who I am? I said, Norman, listen, I'm your neighbor. He said, I'm your neighbor. Had those same glasses on. He had dirt in his left ear. I could not believe it. He had an ice cream cone. He had ate part of it and had part of his whiskers. And he looked at me out of those eyes, out of those thick glasses. And I said, Norman, do you know who Jesus is? He said, do you know who Jesus is? I said, because people were beginning to look. I said, Norman, did you ever think about asking Jesus to come into your heart and your life? He never repeated me. For the first time, he said, I've given it serious consideration. I was shocked. A couple nights later, the Lord said, 700 Club's going to have an extra special good program on tonight. Invite Norman. Hey, Norman! Hey, Norman, y'all come over tonight and watch television. 700 Club's got a big... come on. Well, the Lord wanted to witness to him. He said, okay. He dressed up for us that night. He didn't take a bath. He didn't put on different clothes. He put on an old string tie that somebody had given him. Hung about like that, and here he come across the street that night. And he come up the steps, and he came in the house. I've got a chair that is light-colored, gold, very light, velvet, kind of, it's my lazy boy. I love it. I crank it out, and, you know, go, and I love it. It's right in front of the television. And the Lord said, get him there where he can see, because he's got those glasses, and I want to witness to him. And I said, Norman, come on in. We're really glad to have you tonight at our house. Lied. I said, sit down over here in my chair. He sat down in my chair and he watched 700 Club. He was witness to. My wife sat back here and I sat back here and we watched him watch 700 Club. And after a while, he got up and said, thank you very much. And he started out the door and I went over and turned the light on for him. I said, watch the steps number. Good night, Norman. Good night now. Come back. And good night. Closed the door. I ran in the house, ran over to my chair. I looked at my chair. There wasn't a spot on it. It was like no one had ever sat there. It was clean. My wife sprayed a little bit of stuff in the air, and the house smelled real good, and we couldn't even tell he'd been there. A few days later, the Lord said, take him somewhere with you. I said, hey, Norman, you ever go to the St. Louis baseball game? Busch Stadium, St. Louis? No. Like to. I said, we'll go. Picked him up just a few days later. It was hot weather by this time. He come out with one of the longest wool tweedy looking winter coats on you've ever laid eyes on. It touched him about his shoes, and he's big, tall. He looked like the Gray Ghost when he came out of the house. I said, Norman, you're not going to need that coat. It's hot, you know. We're going to be outdoors. If there's no, and it's the sun just, and you'll, and you leave. And he said, oh, where am I? Oh, I said, Norman, you know, get in the car, Norman. Turn the air conditioner wide open. Heads up the interstate to St. Louis. He kept looking at that CB radio. Finally, I said, talk on that thing. Here, push that button and talk. I said, hey, man, Breaker, we got a fella here never had a CB, never been around one before. He mows lawns around our town for a living, and he cleans ashes out of the furnaces in the wintertime. I said, let's give him a name. Give him a nickname. Somebody said, well, he'd be the old grass cutter. And he just, and I said, here, old grass cutter, talk to him. He said, hello? It's the old grass cutter. And he was fascinated. He got to St. Louis at the ball game. We parked in the parking area. And when we got out of the car, I figured out a plan. I said, Norman, I'm not going in the ball game with you if you wear that stupid old coat. I was really afraid what somebody would think again. I said, Norman, leave it in the car. Just leave it here. He looked at me and he studied me to see if I was really that serious. And I was. And we faced off for a while. And finally, he began to take that old coat off. And when he took it off, I saw why he was wearing it. He had on two pair of dress pants that were split, both of them, all the way up the back. I said, put your coat back on, Norman. We went in the ball game. We turned that turnstile and walked in. And the first guy we saw was a little old guy with a T-top on. He had a shorts on right here. He didn't have a muscle on his body, but he thought he did. He had hair that stood out like a Brillo pad. He had a transistor radio great big under this arm. He had a big cup of something to drink in this arm, and he was bebopping in the ball game. He looked at Norman, never batted an eye. Looked at me a little strange. We got in. Norman didn't watch the game at all. He watched the crowd. 30,000 people. He said, could I have a hot dog? I gave him a hot dog and then another one and then 10 more. And I gave him soda and peanuts. I never seen a machine eat like that. He just ate and ate and ate. And the seventh inning got there. And I forgot it was the seventh inning. Everybody in the place stood up to stretch. And I said, oh, yeah, Norman. But this time I had told him, because it was hot, he was perspiring. I said, just take your coat down and drape it over the seat. Sometime back around the third inning or so, he draped it over the seat and he was much more comfortable. But now it was the seventh inning and we were standing all over the park, and I said, stand up, Norman, let's stretch. And we were just stretching away. And all of a sudden I happened to glance behind me. The guy behind me was going. I said, sit down, Norman, sit down, sit down. It'd been a busy year, busy year. I've been working at the coal mine and I was tired, and I've been singing in churches on the weekend, and I was telling the Lord about, you know, because my vacation was coming up, and you know what the Lord told me? He said, why don't you take Norman with you on vacation? I said, I'm going to Opryland, Lord. Norman at Opryland just, and he said, I said, Lord, I'm not going to do it now. I'm tired, and a couple of weeks later, we was going down the highway to Opryland, Norman sitting beside me, my wife and kids in the back. I noticed something about him. He was beginning to be relaxed around people. He was beginning to be less nervous, and he didn't talk to himself as much as he had before. We got to Opryland, and I didn't put him on the Wabash Cannonball, you know, because he's about 62 years old at the time, and I was afraid he might have a heart problem over that, you know. So I tried to pick out a ride he could handle, and I found the bumper cars. I said, Norman, did you ever ride in a... No. I said, here's how they work. Push the pedal, turn the wheel, and have a good time. Get in there. We got him in there, and he sat down in that big old bumper car with all them kiddies and all them girlfriends that wanted to hit their boyfriends with their car and all the mothers that wanted to hit the fathers with a car, and he got everybody in the place caught over to one side. They turned that right on. He had the whole crowd pinned, and he had his car sideways and had them jammed in over there, and they were mad. And he was looking around going... And looking at me going, and he couldn't figure it out. We began to laugh. We were standing outside that place. Tears began to run in my eyes. I said, look, come on, look at him, Norman. He's got everyone caught over there. And the kids were like, oh. And finally, somebody got loose. And the ride was about half over, and they felt like they'd been cheated, and they were in a hurry. They came all the way around that rink, and they wanted to hit somebody before that ride was over. And there sat Norman, and they hit him full speed ahead. He went, oh. And then he really tried to get that thing going, and here comes someone else, and they were starting to get loose now in great numbers, and one by one, they'd come around and they'd hit Norman, and the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me at Opryland. And he said, that's what they've been doing to Norman all his life. People been hitting on him. They've been hitting on him. When they throw snowballs at him, like he's not a human being, they hit on him. When they bring him old junky clothes they wouldn't wear anymore themselves, they hit on him. And then he said something I'll never forget. He said, that's what my children do, my children, to one another. They get mad because they can't play the piano or the organ, or they can't teach their favorite Sunday school class, or they gossip about the preacher, or they gossip about some lady or some man. And then he reminded me of the 13th chapter, 1 Corinthians. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, though I have all faith so I can remove mountains, understand all mysteries, if I have no charity, love, I need another cassette tape, another book, No, it says, I am nothing. I had taken Norman an old suit of mine that I didn't wear anymore. God brought that to my attention, and I went over and looked in this closet, and I couldn't believe my eyes. Old shoes of every description you can imagine, old suits, sweaters that hung this way, all kinds of ties, bolos, sparkly ties, big wide ties, little ties, nothing that anyone would want to wear. I said, God, give me an opportunity. Bless me some way, Lord. And a revival to sing at came in, and I know they gave me an offering at the end of the revival, and the Lord said, buy Norman a suit. I went downtown, I bought one of the nicest suits I could find. I made sure it cost at least more than any suit I owned in my wardrobe, and I went to get him and take him, and he picked it out. He liked it. It was kind of dark blue. He had good taste. It had a little stitching around here. It was polyester. It was nice. It was expensive. And I said, Norman, you ever been clean? He said, it's been years. He said, he said, I'm a hermit, you know. My dad got killed in the coal mines about 50 years ago. Went to work one day. I was just a little boy, and he didn't come home. Some men came to our house and said the roof fell in on him. I remember his funeral. I saw my uncle. Haven't ever seen him again. I said, Norman, I'm going to run some water for you in your bathtub, and I really want you to get clean, because tonight I want to take you down to a church that's having a gospel singing. Went in his bathroom, I couldn't believe my eyes. Pulled a curtain back, oh, the floor was like dirt. The tub was so filthy, I had to take all the sacks out of it first. He saved paper sacks, I didn't know why. I took them all out, and then I cleaned the tub with SOS pads, and when I turned the hot water faucet on, it fell in the tub, and I got it back up and taped it back on, and got it, it leaked a little, but it worked all right. And I got his hot water in there, and I went in and I said, now, Norman, see, you got a new white shirt and a tie to go with your suit, and you got new shoes and socks and underclothes, and let's really get clean. I mean, you know, really, really. And I said, when you're through, holler at me, okay? He went in there in the bathroom, and I went in the living room. Look at that unbelievable house he lived in. Wallpaper sagging, rain had got in, falling off the walls and the ceiling. And dirt everywhere. He had an old coal furnace that belched smoke in the wintertime. Something was wrong with it. I don't know how he lived at night when he turned that on in the wintertime. Sometimes he didn't use it. I saw that he had several covers on his bed. He'd just crawl under, and that old mattress was like that. And I shook the curtain, and dust just came out. And I said, while he was in there in the bathtub, I heard him in there. He was in there soaping. He finally said, I'm okay. I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm clean. I went in there and I pulled that curtain back. I told him to get out of the tub and just put a towel around him. There he stood. His glasses were off, water dripping in the floor, and with a towel around him, and I looked at him, and have you ever seen mud that had just been smeared? I said, not clean enough, Norman. Won't you get back in the tub? Now, Norman, I'm serious. Now, get clean. We want to be... And went back in the living room, looked the other way, went back in after he said he was okay. That went on time and time again. Finally, the floor was wet, the mirror was wet, the tub was wet, I was wet, he was wet. But when he got finished, I had scrubbed his head. I got him down like this. I didn't hurt him, but I got him in a headlock where he couldn't get away. I got an SOS, I got some lava soap, and I got a sponge, and I began to rub the top of his head, and I rubbed it, and he'd go, I rubbed it, and pretty soon I looked, and there was a bunch of white showing through. He had beautiful white hair. I scrubbed some more. I said, put your face up here. And he went. And I scrubbed his face, and I gave him the sponge. I said, all right, big boy, from the neck on down, it's yours. Get it clean. When we got finished, water all over the place, you could rub your thumb on him anywhere, and he'd squeak. We went downtown to the church, to the gospel singing. We sat down. People come up to me and say, well, Brother Mike, we're really glad to have you visiting here tonight. God bless you. And who's your friend? And about the time they'd get his hand, I'd say, that's Norman. And they'd go. One Sunday right after that, the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me and said, today is Norman's day. Take a Bible. Get a pastor friend. We went over to Norman's. We got the book of Romans, and we begin to tell him how we've all come short of the kingdom of God, how he could receive salvation. At first he didn't understand, and then he grasped it. He said to me, oh, I see what you mean. He said, I used to listen when I was a little boy to the radio. My mom would play, that preacher was on, and he said, you mean like my windows right there are so dirty? And he said, you're saying that Jesus, if I'll ask him, will clean my heart up like sometimes when I wash my windows? And I said, yeah, Norman, he'll clean up inside of you, and then the outside too. And he said, I would like that. And that old house with the wind blowing and cracks in the walls. Old dirty house. Norman prayed a simple prayer. And he said, Jesus, Mike said that if I'd ask you to, you'd come into my heart. And I'd like that. Come in. And he was washed white as snow. I rejoiced. And God began to do a work in him. But God began to do a work in me. I didn't mind if everybody in town knew I was helping Norman. I used to tell them down at the ball game a little bit during intermission. A bunch of us guys would be standing around drinking a Coke. And I'd say, just out of clear blue, I couldn't stand it anymore. I wanted to pray so bad for this little good deed I was doing. I said, I'm helping Norman. These guys would look at me like, huh? What do you think they're going to do in the second half, Fred? They're going to run the... And God said, that's not loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, folks, I want to tell you something. When I'm in a church that needs this message because they have a lack of love, I always mention to them that God is praised in a lot of places. Most Christians, generally speaking, love God, but not many love their neighbor as their self. I'm going to finish with this. And believe me, there's been 8 years or more now of this. It could go on all night long. I will not. I'll finish with this. I had pride in me. God still works on it. He said, are you willing to help Norman? No matter how long it takes. Are you willing to help him, take him places, make him a part of your life? Are you really willing? I said, oh God, he's so unlovely sometimes. He said, are you willing to go out there in a coal shed and bring his coal in when he can't carry it anymore and put it in his old stoker-matic? And I said, there's no light out there, Lord, and sometimes the snow in Illinois is deep. And he had me do so many things in that house that it was beginning to be a routine, back and forth across the street. And one night he challenged me with what I want to close with. He said, in the bathroom one night, I was standing there looking at his bathroom. I had remodeled his bathroom by now. Fixed his faucet, I fixed his sink, I got him some new walls, and I put him a new Celotex ceiling in and had a light I was working on. And there was one thing in that bathroom that I just would not touch. It's over in a corner, and it's dirty. I just said, no, no. I said, now, God, singing a choir? I'm singing choir. I love them. I love you all. Yeah, I do that. Travel all the country and sing and tell them about Jesus. Okay, Lord. Not that. He kept troubling me about it, troubling me about it. I kept telling him no, kept telling him no. I fought that thing. I said, no way. He said, all I want you to do is fix that ring and lid on the top of it. You see, if you look at it, and I did, it had the two bolts that held the ring into the ceramic part. One of those bolts had broken off, and if you accidentally bumped into it, it'd just swing down by that one bolt and hang beside the bow. And he said, look over there. And I look, and someone, and I'm going to ask him one of these days, I'm not brash towards our Father, but I'm going to ask him, I don't think he'll mind, I'm going to ask him who put that there. In a plastic bag was a brand new ring and lid. All I had to do was take a bolt off, take the old one off, throw it away, put the new one on, put the bolts on, and it was finished, but I wasn't going to touch it. Set over in front of my television. One night, he troubled me so bad I couldn't watch television. I finally turned around to Carmel, my wife, and I just said, I'm not going to do it. She was looking at the Sears catalog or something. She looked at me like... I couldn't stand it. About an hour later, I went up and got my coveralls out of the pantry, and I put them on, put the collar up. I pulled the sleeves down, found me some gloves that came down over the sleeves. She laughed and told me later, if I'd have had an operating mask like a surgeon, I'd have had that on. I got my toolbox, and I crept across the street real late, over into Norman's bathroom, got the tools out, started working on that thing. And that one bolt that was left, I just couldn't... I tried to get that boxing wrench on it, just wouldn't... And if I was God, and a guy was finally willing to do something like this, I'd just have him touch that thing, it'd come right off, wouldn't you? But it wouldn't do it. I just... And finally, I tried to get as close as I could to it without touching it. You know, I'd watch it. Well, watch it. And I'll tell you something, you got to hug one of them things to work on them, you know. And I just couldn't get it off. And so I know we're in a church, and I'm going to trust God. He's got a good sense of humor, because here's what I finally had to do. It's true. I had to get down on that old filthy floor so I could see up under that thing. And I crawled, and I took that wrench, and I finally got it on that nut, and I moved it a little bit, and old rust and dirt just hit me right in the eye like that. I said, "This ain't the 700 Club. This ain't PTL." And I began to have one of Jim's pity parties he was talking about, and the Spirit of the Lord took care of it. He spoke to me and said, right there on the floor, he said, "When you do it unto the least of these, you do it unto me." It changed me. I didn't care if anybody noticed. I didn't want any money. I didn't want any acclamation for it. I didn't care anymore. I just began to see when it said, "I'll give my body to be burned, but if I have not love, it's for nothing." I began to understand that word, loving your neighbor as yourself. Went back home and I said, "God, what else will you have for me?" He said, "Son, get in your car and take those songs that I've given you all over the country and leave them at radio stations." I think maybe he thought, maybe I can trust him, maybe use him a little bit. And I went in the car, all the radio stations, and he opened up television, and suddenly record sales came in, and then doors opened to speak all over the country. But he never allowed any of that to happen in my life, not the first bit of it. No matter how much I agonized with him for 35 years, no matter how much I hollered and said, "Why can't you use me, God? Why am I having to wait?" Until he had taught me to love my neighbor as myself, through my friend, my neighbor named Norman. He opened the doors, and today, one of the favorite things that I get to tell around the country, if it be in Indonesia or Holland or America, is the story of how God used the old man named Norman to teach me to love my neighbor as myself.
Well, with that, we're back in our Focus on the Family studios in Southern California. You have been listening to part of a message by Mike Atkins, a musical evangelist that's traveling around our country. And, Doctor, that is an incredibly moving and graphic depiction of that man's life.
As I said at the top of the program, Gil, it starts off with this kind of earthy style that some people would not bother to listen to if they didn't know there was gold there. But now perhaps our listeners can see why I wanted to air this presentation.
What went through your mind when he was telling that story about the bumper cars?
You know what went through my mind, Gil. You've asked the right question, because I've always been sensitive to those who hurt and those who were hit by life and hurt by life. We just get letters constantly from people like that. I knew that we were going to hear this presentation today, and I brought one with me. Now, this is just a letter that came not too long ago. I've gotten permission to share just a couple of paragraphs from this letter. But listen, this is from a woman. She said, "Your program helped me tremendously because I'm single at the age of 29. I want to be married, but it doesn't seem to be available to me. And I feel my singleness is a stigma and a punishment, so to speak. I'm sure you're asking yourself why this woman," she's referring to herself, "why this woman feels she needs to be punished. Well, I don't think you have addressed this problem before, but I feel unworthy to be married. Why? Well, a lot of it stems from my feelings of a poor self-concept. I was born with a bilateral cleft palate and a hair lip. So I was always teased about my speech and looks. Multiple corrective surgeries have changed that, but the internal emotional scars are still there. Then my father," listen to this now, "then my father, a physician, decided to leave my mom, and to justify his actions, he told me, a child of 7 at the time, that he was leaving Mom because he could no longer stand to be around an imperfect and ugly child. I was 19 before I could even tell my mom what my father had said. I lived in terror for those 12 years that my mother would also get fed up with me. Can't you see those bumper cars hitting her? And by the time she's 29 now, her whole life is influenced by the pain of the experience, the rejection that Norman has also felt.
I guess Norman would represent an extreme example, but the point you're making is that it changes us. It causes us to be different in our ability to relate when we're constantly pounded like that.
Yeah, and the message is not just empathy or pity for those who have been hit by life, but it is to reach out, as Mike did, to those around us. I wonder, Gil, if I would have thought to try to reach Norman for the Lord. He seemed retarded, he seemed psychotic, he seemed weird, he seemed unreachable, and yet the Lord laid him on Mike's heart. And Norman has worth to the Lord, as much worth as you and me. And those people are all around us. I think of the presentation Al Sanders made to our staff not too long ago in our chapel time. Al Sanders, of course, is the founder of the Ambassador Agency. He represents Focus on the Family with radio stations around the country and other programs, including Chuck Swindoll's Insight for Living. Al made a comment that I'll never forget. He said that he was dialing a number one day, and he dialed the wrong number accidentally, and a woman answered the phone, and he asked if so-and-so was there, and she said no. And he apologized for dialing the wrong number, and he was ready to hang up. And she said, "Wait, wait. I'm 82 years old, and no one ever calls me. Won't you talk to me?" Those people are all around us. And if this program today has done nothing more than to say to our listeners, look for the down-and-outer. Look for the person that Jesus called the least of these, my brethren, and see in that person the face of Jesus himself, as Mike did for Norman, and spend a little time seeing if you can not only help them in their circumstances, but maybe reach them for the Lord, for they have been hit by the bumper cars of life. Boy, what an incredible investment of our time.
And those concluding remarks from Dr. James Dobson bring to an end this first program we called A Man Called Norman.
A little children rejoice, sure a child of a king. Rejoice, you're a child of the King. Rejoice, you're a child of the King. Lift your head up high, rejoice, you're a child of the King. Little children, rejoice, you're a child of the King. Rejoice.
Rejoice, you're a child of the King. Rejoice. church, be the church, let the people rejoice, for we've settled the question, we've made our choice, let the anthem ring out songs of battles before, storms and tempests and rocks on the shore, though the hull may be battered, inside safe and dry, it will carry
conqueror has made the mistake of thinking that because he had driven the Church of Jesus Christ out of sight, that he had stilled its voice and snuffed out its life. But God has always had a people. The powerful current of a rushing river is not diminished because it is forced to flow underground. The purest water is the stream that bursts crystal clear into the sunlight after it has fought its way through solid rock. There have been charlatans who, like Simon the magician, sought to barter on the open market that power which cannot be bought or sold. But God has always had a people, men who could not be bought, and women who were beyond purchase. God has always had a people. There have been times of affluence and prosperity when the church's message has been nearly diluted into oblivion by those who sought to make it socially attractive, neatly organized, and financially profitable. It has been gold-plated, draped in purple, and encrusted with jewels. It has been misrepresented, ridiculed, lauded, and scorned. These followers of Jesus Christ have been, according to the whim of the times, elevated as sacred leaders and martyred as heretics. Yet, through it all, there marches on that powerful army of the meek, God's chosen people, who cannot be bought, murdered, flattered, or stilled. On to the ages they march, church. God's church triumphs, alive and well.
Let the church be the church, be the church. Let the people.